This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's good to have you with us today. It's been 50 years since Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. began a major push for economic justice in our country and joined it to the civil rights movement already underway. And on this national celebration of Dr. King's birthday, we look back to 1968 and the Poor People's Campaign, a call for underprivileged people across the country to rise up to demand better jobs, better wages, education, and more. King talked about the poor in America, in Vietnam, and around the world at a church in Memphis, Tennessee on April 3rd, the night before he was murdered.
If something isn't done and done in a hurry to bring the colored peoples of the world out of their long years of poverty, their long years of hurt and neglect, the whole world is doomed.
King also spoke that night in support of the sanitation workers in Memphis, Tennessee, on strike in protest of low wages and poor working conditions.
The issue is injustice. The issue is the refusal of Memphis to be fair and honest in its dealings with its public servants who happen to be sanitation workers.
50 years later now, there's an effort underway to revive Dr. King's Poor People's Campaign. Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris is co-director of the Cairo Center and co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival.
What's very important to us is that this Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, is not a commemoration. We are not trying to just 50 years later say there was really important work that happened, we should honor that. We think that the only way to honor that work, the only way to look back into history and learn from it, is to pick up work that was unfinished and take it to its fruitful conclusion. And so today, 50 years later, the only solution we have to the problems that are facing us now is to band together and to say that enough is enough, and that people of goodwill and conscience, impacted folks, people who believe that the arc of the moral universe is just, need to say we need to put the priorities of people around healthcare, around living wages, around an end to systemic racism. That's what thousands of people across this country are uniting to do.
So give me a sense then of what this is going to look like in the spring on the streets and on people's TV screens and in their newspapers. You've pledged protests and demonstrations, direct action, you mentioned it, across the country in dozens of cities. What will that look like?
So what's being planned is that starting on May 13th, which is Mother's Day, and going for 40 days until June 21st, in state houses across the country, people of all walks of life will come together for grassroots organizing, door-to-door organizing, direct action, voter registration. And there'll be kind of themes of each week. There'll be 6 weeks of this kind of season of moral direct action, including people are signing up to say that they're prepared to engage in nonviolent civil disobedience. There will be mass meetings and cultural events. There will be public education, you know, forums. There will be direct actions and marches, and there will be opportunities for folks to be doing nonviolent civil disobedience at state capitals across the country. And then it will all kind of culminate on June 23rd, when folks will get their kind of marching orders to go back and keep on building in their communities with the moral agenda that has already been developed, to be able to build longstanding, deeply rooted moral movements in their states, made up of people who are impacted materially as well as impacted kind of spiritually around these issues. People are ready to make their voices heard.
And Dr. Theo Harris, let's say we have you back in 5 years and we replay part of this discussion between you and me here today. How are we going to know that you were a success? What's going to look like success for you when you look back on this day when you were planning this direct action to know if it worked out or not?
We see two kinds of outcomes, two kinds of success. One is the policies that we're going to be able to get passed. And we're going to work on policies coming out of grassroots communities that need to be passed, you know, around healthcare, around living wages, around guaranteed income, around safe water, around voter suppression and voting rights, all of those issues. And so part of the way that we'll gauge the success is the policies that we're able to enact. but it's also the people that have been woken up who have said, this is our country and we want to make it good for everybody. And that is the kind of success that when you look at social change efforts in history, people think it's a little bit harder to measure that, but you can see it because of the hundreds and thousands of people who have said that, you know, everyone's survival and thriving in this society is what matters to me. You know, already the success has started because already people, in a time when things look pretty bleak, in a time when there's mean-spiritedness everywhere, there are people who, against all odds, have come together to say, we can make this country something that it has not yet been, but it can be.
Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign. Doctor, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
We turn now to Sean King, columnist at The Intercept and a social justice activist. Sean, welcome.
Good to be on here with you, man.
And it's good to have you, Sean. It always is. Well, you heard Liz Theo Harris there talking about practical success,
right,
in this age of rebuilding a social justice movement in the name of Dr. Martin Luther King. What did you think about what she had to say and showing results? You know, not the best speeches, not the best marches, but the best policies.
Yeah, I thought it was spot on. I mean, I resonated with every word of it. I mean, it resonates with a lot of us because I still believe speeches and marches are important, but we're at a point in this new movement, this new civil rights movement, where we're saying, how do we properly organize people in a way that resonates, in a way that sticks, and how do we mobilize these people that we've organized in a way that makes substantive policy changes happen? And we're starting to see that city by city, town by town, state by state. And I think we're beginning to see, particularly in the age of Donald Trump, that we have to act locally for the changes that we want to see. And so I resonate with this Poor People's Campaign and with their ideals.
You know, last week at the White House, Sean, was a pretty remarkable string of events.
Yeah.
The president led a commemoration of Dr. King, had some folks in the White House for the photo op and the brief speeches. Those are pretty normal. It was 24 hours before where the president's words in that meeting about immigration were broadcast all over the world. We all know what the key word was.
Yeah.
And I think we know what the key attitude was too, which I said on this air clearly was racist. It was a remarkable 24 hours and it's been a remarkable week since.
Yeah, I'm still so disgusted by it. And it's a crazy time. It's a disgusting time to hear these things come out of the mouth of the president. I spoke to so many friends of mine who are immigrants from those nations that he offended, and they were hurt by it. It wasn't just like, oh, that's gross. It's hurtful to hear the president of the United States describe your country of origin, your homeland, in that way. And I think he's continued. Like, there are moments where I think it can get no worse. I think we've hit some degree of rock bottom, and Donald Trump says something or does something to show me, no, we can go lower than this. It can get uglier than this. And it's disturbing. I think this is something that's going to stick with many of us.
What's your outlook right now, Sean? Day to day, week to week, it can get tough, I think, and I won't speak for you, but seeing these developments week for week going lower toward rock bottom, okay, now I've hit rock bottom, what's going to happen next Tuesday? You're stuck in the moment instead of in the long fight.
Yeah. You know, we can't get stuck in that moment. And I think Donald Trump and the things he says and does really does disturb many of us. But I'm not allowing the words that come out of his mouth or the tweets that he issues to determine my mood or my outlook or my hope for what's ahead. I'm actually hopeful, and I say that with no hyperbole. I look and see the quality of our organizing. I feel like 2018, and I say this not just to be optimistic. I really believe it. I think 2018 is going to be a year of a lot of substantial victories, political victories, elections, serious reforms that get passed. And I feel hopeful about that because I know the groups of people that are putting in the work to organize, and there's an energy of people who want to fight back and want to see the fruits of their labor. And so 2018 will still be tough, and we will continue to have hard moments where we wonder, have we gone back in time, and why does it feel so ugly? But I think just like in other times in the 60s, you know, they had so much ugliness that they experienced, but they won some really hard-fought victories as well, and I think we'll experience that.
Sean, before I let you go, and I can hear the optimism in your voice, look on the national scene for me for one second, because for all of the optimism that you and your allies have in the fights that you're fighting, when you look all the way across the country, it seems like it's going to be slow.
Well, some reforms will be slow and will be hard to enact, but you know, that's why we say on some of these fights we have to go local. Like, for instance, the state of Georgia, which is a Republican state, may not pass meaningful reforms on the decriminalization and legalization of marijuana, but Atlanta can. And so even though 63 million people voted for Donald Trump, and even though he has this base, this 35% base that seems that they will never leave him no matter what he says or does, we do see a rising tide of people who are incredibly frustrated with him. I think you're going to see an increasing number of people who are resentful and regretful that they voted for him. And I think there's evidence of that. I still believe there are some things that we can find some bipartisan support for. The state of North Carolina recently became the last state, the 50th state right after New York, to pass, raise the age legislation so that children are not prosecuted for petty misdemeanors. And it was a bipartisan effort. Republicans and Democrats came together. It was a nearly unanimous vote to do it. And actually, they came together better in North Carolina on this than we did here in New York. And so there are opportunities for people to come together. And when we see those, we have to hold on to them tightly.